For everything paranormal, Para X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
And direct from the phantom shores of the Hudson River, my name is Ra, and I'm here to awaken the dormant particles that are spiraling inside your DNA. So come with me as we go further down the mystical spiral of life. It's Fallen Angel Friday, Halloween style here on Spiral Radio. Each and every week we unveil the different shades of you and the different shades of me until we all vibrate the same frequency. Go to Genesis6Conspiracy.com if you want to hear Spiral Radio regular and my buddy Gary Wayne, who's the guest tonight. And you can find me, like always, on Exploring the Ka on YouTube and on the mysticalspiral.com on the World Wide Web. And my guest tonight, Gary, is an author. He's a researcher. He is a dedicated Christian and has been a guest many times here on Spiral Radio, has become a regular, and it's interesting to have him on every time, and the information and the amount of research and time and dedication and passion for these subjects that Gary has presented here and all the shows that he's been on is just a pleasure to hear each and every time, and it's a blessing for me to have met Gary and to have him on my show. And we're going to also have him on my other show on TFRLive.com, my IRI show too, coming up. So tonight, you know, since we're real close to Halloween, I thought we can really get into what this type of year is to us. And, you know, in certain mystery traditions, this time of year begins in the place of deep shadow, when the stars of the Pleiades start to appear, and they start to appear close to the horizon of the earth. And this season is usually marked by this time of year, this the eve of November. And in certain pagan rituals and hidden cults and all types of mystery traditions and occult traditions, it was commonly known as Hallowmas or Shadow Fest or Samhain, or, you know, the different names over time. I know in my family lineage it was called the Shadow Fest, and it's where they would honor procreative darkness in a way, and it's an interesting time of year, and we're gonna go deep down the myths and the lore that comes with this. So I want to welcome once again Gary to my show Spiral Radio. Welcome, Gary.
Well, so happy to be back tonight and really looking forward to talking all things Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, in this time of year, I mean, I think the lines have got blurred over time, like all inner mysteries and holidays. And I mean, would you consider this the same thing this time of year in certain Catholic and certain Christian? It's what it would be like the Feast of All Saints.
Well, yeah, it's certainly related to the Feast of All Saints, although it's one of those things that didn't happen, you know, at the same time as, you know, Samhain and all the other names for All Hallows Eve is talked about. And it was, you know, in the last, say, 1,200 years, it sort of moved to mesh with the timing of Halloween. And, you know, that first happened with Pope Gregory III, where he moved All Saints Day from May to November 1st. And then by, you know, about 1000 CE, the Roman Church makes November 2nd All Souls Day, All Souls Day, and they celebrate, you know, very similarly to Halloween and Samhain, which is, depending on, you know, where you're using the dates from, you know, all of them are pretty much October 31 to about November 2nd. But what's interesting is with the movement around the year 1000 is that they start to wear costumes and do bonfires, and these costumes are of saints, angels, and devils. So very, very similar to, you know, the Halloween tradition. They didn't go from door to door looking for candy, but they went door to door to collect soul cakes, where they would collect those cakes and have prayers for spirits in purgatory. And then they lit turnip lamps for them as well, which again is very much mixed in with the Halloween tradition. So that's kind of how that meshes up. It's not really a Christian holiday, that's for sure, but it certainly is celebrated worldwide by Christians and non-Christians alike.
Yeah, I mean, and the whole dressing up too. I mean, if you go back in Italy, I mean, it started, I don't know when it started, but they started to wear certain masks in over time that resembled what we call in Etruscan culture, they would call the Gregori or the Watchers. And the Umbria collection is one example that I saw, these masks that have almost the eyes would be almost like a gray alien and blackened out a little bit, and they would have this weird figure and face that also gets been getting played and a recurring theme over time, just with different names. So it's just interesting to know like where this first originated and when it came from. I know that in, you know, ancient European beliefs, it's talked about at this time of year is when the borders between the what we call natural and supernatural, or this world and the other world or the underworld, start to become possible and maybe bleed through a little bit, and the veil gets thinner. And it was thought that the spirits and souls of our ancestors and the ones that have departed come and go during this time very easily, and they cross between the worlds. And, you know, it's also said, and I know you're going to find this interesting, and I can't wait to hear your answer with this, is it's an ancient belief, right, that the dead or otherworldly spirits or disembodied spirits, possibly disembodied souls of maybe the dead Nephilim, it's said that these ancient spirits were attracted to blood, and they could be temporarily reanimated and given animation and voice and feelings and power with an offering of this substance, with this blood. And I think that when you have these tales of these giants and they're saying fee fi fo fum, I can smell the blood of an Englishman, I think they can smell the DNA. I think they could smell the blood of their ancestors, and they can hunt them down and find it. And I think that that's not just a nursery rhyme. They're actually smelling the DNA, Gary. They're smelling the blood of their ancestors. It's some kind of heightened sense, I think, some kind of supernatural ability compared to what we have. But it's just normal to them. And I think that this is one of the reasons that we have that nursery rhyme. And I think that that's why It's an ancient belief that the dead are attracted to the blood, and these souls are attracted to the blood of their ancestors and others.
Well, it's certainly connected in all sorts of aspects with the giants and the traditions that descend down through time from the giants, because the giants or the Nephilim, when they lost their immortal spirit, and or in, let's say, Greek legends or others where the human spirit starts to take over because these were the demigods of ancient times, and that their mortality was starting to happen from being a demigod as opposed to a full god, that they were trying to do things to extend their lives and to increase their cognitive ability. So all around the world you have, whether it's a concoction or straight, so either a beer or wine in blood, or just drinking blood straight, they would drink blood to increase their lifespan and their cognitive abilities. And so this is an ancient tradition.
So you're saying the more blood they would consume, the longer they would live.
That's what they believed, yes. And this comes down through vampire tales today, which is why the vampires drink blood for immortality. And it has to be human blood to provide that for them. So this is not, you know, when you have a giant saying, fee, fi, fo, fum, I mean, not only can they smell the blood of an Englishman, probably, and secondly, it also, when you talk about blood going into, let's say, ancient bones or the dust of a body to bring it back to life, that is, again, that sort of immortality sort of belief coming through.
And that's why I think we have those stories of animating clay, you know?
Yes.
It's crazy because I think that's where a lot of these – and you see the fee-fi-fo-fum, it's also like he's saying an incantation maybe to keep that – it's like a ritual maybe that keeps that heightened sense of smell. He's saying that rhyme. It's like a rhyme fee-fi-fo-fum. Like it's like a little – it's almost like his own little incantation or mantra.
It is. Yeah, I believe that for sure. So blood is was a very, very important part of the ancient giant culture, and then afterwards as well. So, and you also touched on something that, you know, during the time of All Hallows Eve is that you reach this area of a veil between this world and the spirits that aren't sleeping. And again, it's the bodiless spirits of the Nephilim, which are the spirits that don't tend to sleep. And secondly, starts to get really connected with sort of, I would say, the home of the popularization of Halloween, which would be, you know, what we talked about in the last show with the Tuatha De Danann and Diana and all that sort of connection. Well, this is a very much a Druidic Celtic tradition on steroids. I mean, this is where most of it comes from, right? And they believe that November 1st and October 31st was the Celtic New Year. And this was the day when the portals opened from the other world into the realm of the fairy, the realm of the Shay, the realm of spirits. And they used to burn bonfires, much like I just talked about with the Catholics, and the tradition starting at about 1,000 to burn to ward off the evil spirits, because there was good spirits they believed and bad spirits that came across through these portals during All Hallows Eve for at least one evening, and some other traditions a little bit longer. And it's very, very similar to, you know, the Day of the Dead ritual at the same time, October 31 to November 2nd, you know, Dia de los Muertos, and they would do offerings to these spirits to pacify them, even though it's also related to, you know, celebrating the spirits and the genealogies and the ancestors past. But it's still got this huge connection that is almost worldwide for this celebration of when the dead comes at the same time of year. And so whether or not it's the dead of humans or it's the demon spirits, everybody will have to make those sort of decisions for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, and people just misunderstand all types of symbols in general. I mean, just that the muertos, like you're saying, just that skull symbol. I mean, that's a misunderstood symbol as well. I mean, it's supposed to people most think it signifies death or evil, but it's actually in the occult, it actually signifies having a lot of wisdom and inner knowledge. And it also can of course, if you're seeing like a blood skull or some kind of demonic looking thing, but just the skull alone is represents one's life experience and mm-hmm. their inner wisdom. And you know,
would put in there the shamans, because the shamans would put that washed out white look on their face, right?
Yes.
And that goes to magic and to magi.
Moon worship, yeah.
Yeah, and also it goes back to a trickster spirit of gods, which is an interesting little ideology that goes about in the occult. And there's many of these trickster-type gods in prehistory. You know, like Loki would be a significant one, right? And he's also a shapeshifter. And so this has a sort of this tradition back into shapeshifting type trickster gods and into shamans and into magi and into wizards and into witches as it sort of comes down through history. You know, some of those gods that would be the trickster gods, and some of these would be demigods. Hermes, Prometheus, Set, Sun Wang, Vela, Inerta, you know, feathered serpents in some traditions, and raven and thunderbirds. These are all known as trickster gods as you sort of go around the world just doing sort of a quick history. So that all has an interesting real connection as you go back to, you know, the Day of the Dead in Spanish tradition.
Yeah, and I mean, and you touched on the Celtic culture and the different rituals. And I know that this time of year, I think they call it they pronounce it Samhain or Samhain or something like that. Or Samhain, you could say it, or whatever you want to say. But I think that's where the we were talking about the being attracted to the blood, and I think that's where the slaughtering of animal herds. They would slaughter animal herds basically to reduce the drain on feed in the coming season of decline. You know,
mm-hmm.
So
yep.
like if this is something they would do to appease the gods, and I think that's why they also call the moon of this year the blood moon in the Celtic tradition. Yep. They sometimes call it the blood moon, and it's a connection between this blood and death and rebirth in this season. And you know, I also wanted to hear your opinion on what you think. You had mentioned Hermes, and I know I was talking mm-hmm. the other day with someone. And if you're just joining us, everyone in the chat room and out there, we are with Gary Wayne, and you can find him at Genesis6Conspiracy.com. Yeah, Gary, I was just talking to someone the other day. I know you mentioned Hermes, and I know there's certain tales with Hermes and with the goddess Diana and Dianus that I've heard certain stories and lore about a certain technology or magic that they had, where all of a sudden they would produce a sound of like humming bees, and it would lull people to sleep, like an enchantment, some kind of deep sleep. I'm wondering if you've ever heard a story of that before in your research, and what you think this kind of maybe some sort of technology is, where they would produce like this humming of bees sound, and it would put people to sleep.
Yeah, and that's exactly the sound, and it sort of goes to that hive occult belief system. But if you want to talk about the technology that you're referring to, that goes back into prehistory. And, of course, you have Hermes Trismegistus, or the three times Hermes, and it's like three different individuals that are sort of wound together over history. But the one in the ancient world is kind of combined into two individuals. One might be called Idris or Enoch and or Thoth, because they're all talked about the same individuals, and or a god. And what happened in the Antediluvian epoch was, not only did humans, were they developing the seven sacred sciences into all sorts of knowledge and technology, they also had illicit knowledge coming from the gods or the fallen angels, depending on which perspective you want to look at that from. And they took this technology to a level that would be as great as what we have today, or probably even more so, because from a Christian perspective, we're not in the end time yet. And the end time is going to be like the days of Noah from a biblical prophetic perspective. So if that's the case, then their technology was even more so. And so from that, you can imagine all different types of things that they might have been able to do with this technology, whether or not it's creating this buzz sound to put people to sleep or to hypnotize them or to relax them and to work together. There's all sorts of different sort of ideologies to do that. But, you know, things like, you know, anti-gravity, flying machines, spaceships, I mean, it's all part of the antediluvian mythology that is possible.
Yeah.
When you have this civilization that isn't this civilization of goat herders and sheep herders. I mean, this is a civilization that was destroyed by the flood, by all accounts around the world, but a very advanced, high-level civilization.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And, you know, at this time of year, I think, too, it's also said that, like, souls can become lost or earthbound. And that's maybe why, you know, I had this guy on my show, Brett Oldham, who claims to be abducted by gray aliens. And he was on the show Ancient Aliens and Monsters and Mysteries in America telling his story. And he said before his abductions, he would feel a buzz sound or some like humming. And, you know, maybe at this time of year just time of year, just in general, maybe that has something to do with something coming into this world or into from another dimension. There's some sort of vibration or hum sound, because I've had certain experiences in my life as well where I felt a vibration and a hum.
Yeah, you know, going from one dimension to another, getting on the same sort of harmonic vibration or same wavelength, sort of all speaks to that same sort of thought that's part of what this technology could do, and is certainly part of the alien mythos today for sure. So I think it's all sort of connected, because all of this, you know, the aliens just didn't show up today. I mean, they've been around for a long period of time. It's just a matter of what you believe, where they come from.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a different names and different ways of describing things from over time. But I really feel like it's more interdimensional rather than coming from light years away.
Yeah, and that's where everything starts to come together. So you have, in the alien mythos, you have a lot of these spacecraft coming through portals.
Yep.
Whether or not it's in the water or wherever, they're coming through portals. And also in the fairy mythos, you have what they call shays again, S-I-D-E-H-E, or fairy mounds or portals. And there's a word called dolmen, and it's associated with fairy dolmens all around the world, and they're like these mini sort of Stonehenge figures, and dolmen means portal. And and I put in my book this account of a fairy abduction, because they used to come through these fairy mounds or shays or portals, and with their flying machines and great technology, and kidnap people for a fortnight, and would return the people after experimenting and doing things on them after a fortnight, and they wouldn't have any memory of this. And they called them the gray neighbors or the little grays, and they come out of the gnome classification of the little people and the fairy segmentations. And I put this whole description of them, of these little gray fairies, and the abduction in my book. And if you didn't know it was a fairy abduction, you'd swear it was a gray alien abduction.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty intense. Yeah. I mean, you know,
and yet you have, and then you have goblins and things as, and fairies as part of the key sort of costumes people like to use on Halloween, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty funny how people are walking around in all this as well, and getting candy and having a good time, and they have no idea where all of this comes from. I mean, the whole thing about otherworld spirits and the duality of order and chaos, you know, is manifested in different polarities of the villages and the wilderness in our world, and it showed in many different ways, I think, and it's many different traditionals. I know in Slavic traditions, they even build their house or their hut or whatever they call it. I think it's called an izba or something like that. That it's, they almost make their little house like a microcosmic universe in itself. And the center of the house was like the stove, and they would have an image of like the alchemical or otherworldly cauldron, you know, those cauldrons, that they would be flaming, and like an alchemical process of flames and some kind of, you know, beautiful fire. And at the center of it all was like a dizvat, they would call it, or its own belly. And these fires burned in the stove, and they believed that the top of the stove would be kept by the great grandmother spirit, who was trying to keep warm on these cold winter nights and the nights that are coming at this time of year. And it's like beheld by the spirits of all their ancestors, the whole hut.
Wow. Yeah. So many of those types of traditions around the world.
Yeah.
And they seem to have sort of similar sort of ideologies. So again, when I look at doing research, I look at all of these different types of traditions and rituals and history, and I tend to think that they come from a similar sourcing because they have so similar rituals and beliefs that people carry out on certain times of the year and for certain reasons. And, you know, certainly I think that would be, you know, well into that same sort of line of thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing too how much things we don't even realize where the names and of things come from and what they are and what we're actually worshiping. I mean, even the term the word rod, it literally means kinfolk, and it was thought to be like the tree or the rod, the tree of life and one who gives birth, you know, and it's basically worshipped and was considered like evil and condemned by the church, and you know it was widespread throughout Europe and throughout Russia, and basically, I know the rod was basically like the collective psychic imprint of the fathers of the family or the clan, and it was basically like the master of the house or something like that. And it's interesting because in Etruscan culture, they have the Lares, which is the house spirit or the household god. And I think that's what this is comes from, and where with this sort of spirit comes from. I know that there's a spirit called the Domovoy too in Slavic culture. And it's like a hairy human-shaped spirit that's like very, it's like a house spirit. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No, I haven't heard of that one.
yeah, it's called the Domovoy. It's like a house spirit.
Yeah, well, and again, I mean, this whole idea of these spirits, and does that tradition happen? Do they believe in those sort of spirits as coming out at a particular time of year, or is it random?
Definitely. Different types of times of years is associated with spirits. Like the Domovoy, he usually appears to you during the Easter season, and okay. You know, and his voice is usually heard like in a glooming and groaning and sobbing, and it's some kind of like poltergeist type activity that means he's somehow feeling neglected under the household, and somehow the household is making him displeased. And they say that the Domovoy loves to live near the stove under the threshold of the front door. And he may also dwell on a branch of pine or fir in the yard. And sometimes, like, if you have a pine tree on your property, the best it's said to, like, keep a branch should be, like, kept in honor of the Domovoy sometimes. Or otherwise, you know, he would feel displeased, and you would, like, hang things on that branch as an offering to the Domovoy, you know?
Well, again, you know, when you get into this whole idea of these spirits and who they are, and if, you know, people accept that at least a lot of these spirits might be these ancient demigods, then all of a sudden a lot of these rituals sort of have a connection around the world. So, you know, there was hero worship in ancient Greece, and that's after the death of this demigod that would come back and be active in the communities that it was ruling over before it died. And they would do rituals, blood offerings, and otherwise to pacify the spirit of the fallen demigod. And also in Taoism, you have vagabond ghost demons that they believe were powerful heroes and rulers of them before they died out. And they believed that their ancestors came from the gods. And so, you know, they would, you know, use pictures of their celestial masters and talisman and put blood on their doorways and stuff to ward off these angry demon spirits who no longer have bodies. And so this, you know, this gets to be just these connections that you're, you know, just mystify yourself when you start putting them together, because it's involved in a ritual. And
yeah,
you know, going back into the Druidic one that we were talking about before, of Celtic culture, you know, Druids and wizards and witchers would go door to door, and knocking on the doors of the nobles, and they would ask for a treat, and or if they didn't get the treat, they would do a trick, although it's not quite what we do today. So what they were looking for were servants to sacrifice so that they would burn them and use their fat in these lanterns, right, that they would put into turnips in because it wasn't pumpkins that we use today as a jack-o'-lantern.
And now, right? We got pumpkins outside our doors on us.
Yeah, now they, and but because pumpkins were more common in North America than the turnips were. That's why
it, carving evil changed. Faces in them. Wow.
Yeah. And so if they didn't provide them the servant, they would give the trick. And what they would do is in the blood they would make a six-pointed star in a circle to attract evil spirits, because this is all happening on All Hallows' Eve when these spirits are coming in. So if the noble didn't provide the serpent for this, they were inviting nasty demons to go in and haunt them and do horrible things to them.
Wow, that's yeah. That's awesome information, Gary. And we're going to go to break with that. We come back with another half an hour of Gary Wayne, who you can find at Genesis 6. That's the number 6, conspiracy.com. And you can find me at themysticalspiral.com. In honor of this time of year, then same, the song tonight is Nightmare Caviar by Analog Driver. And we'll be back after this with Gary Wayne. Spiral out. Chased by the cover. Chased by the cover.
All the seeds are grown. You trust them.
at home, at work, or anywhere. Thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And we're back. And this is Spiral Radio. And my guest tonight is Spiral Radio friend and regular, the great and one and only Gary Wayne, who you can find at Genesis 6. That's the number 6. Genesis6Conspiracy.com. And he has a book, and he's an author with of the same name, Genesis 6 Conspiracy, which is about how the bloodline of these ancient Nephilim giants still exist and might be what is running our world with the elites. And you got to really check that book out, everybody. It's an encyclopedia of information. Every chapter is a whole book in itself. And Gary, yeah, we were talking about before the break that spirit in shamanistic tradition of the Slavics and Russia. It's in Russia. It's all the Slavic culture. It's called the Domovoi, I think they pronounce it, Domovoi. And that's it's in all traditions, that house spirit, you know, even in Bohemia, Lithuania, and I know like the East Prussia, that's sometimes seen as like a snake, a house snake, and it would live behind the stove or the oven, just like that one. And to kill it, you would have to like destroy the happiness and the health of the whole family if you killed this thing. So if it was when the snake died, it was basically the master of the house would start to die.
Wow, it's almost like it possessed the house.
Yeah, it's the house spirit. Yeah, it's a house possession, and it's always it loves to live near the stove for some reason, and it's interesting that it's like seen almost as the mistress of the house. Most likely, it's usually it comes as a woman, and if the woman is lazy, that is the living in the house. If the woman's like a lazy person there, then this spirit would like cause trouble and start to tickle the children and do weird stuff to the children at night, whining and making a whistling noise, you know, and she's supposedly invisible and never grows old and always remains with that home.
Wow. Yeah. Sounds like, you know, some form of, spirit that's related to these other spirits. So
So these otherworldly spirits you talk of, what other ones have you dug up? Because I know that, like, have you ever heard of too, like, at this time of year there would be like a white tree or some kind of sacred tree that would appear from the other world and be like a shining white tree?
No, I haven't seen that.
We could get into that another time, but it's like a white tree that would form like a sacred tree, and it would be like of the Fae, and it would be from the realm of the Fae, and it would be from like, yeah, and it would show up in this mortal realm at this time of year.
Yeah, interesting. And, you know, I guess if you look at, you know, something that I had mentioned earlier, that there was all sorts of different things going on in the antediluvian world and all sorts of other beings that were being created, crossbred, what have you. But you have like the little people that are in antediluvian mythologies, and you have, you know, I would call, and, you know, might be a violation against the laws of creation, just as the Nephilim were from a Christian perspective. And if all of these ones, and that would include Bigfoot and these hairy things, spirits that you might, you know, that you're mentioning as well, that might be in there. If those spirits are not sleeping and aren't allowed into heaven, I mean, there could be all sorts of different kinds of spirits from that perspective. And I'm just speculating on that.
So here's another thing we can only speculate on, of course. Since the elites of this world might be the descendants, have the blood of these Nephilim, and maybe helping reanimate them in a way, right? And since we touched on at the beginning of the show, since blood attracts them and they can smell the blood and ritualistic blood, you think some of these mass killings that's happening, like in Vegas and places like that, is sort of like ritualistic awakenings for these Nephilim, because it's producing blood in mass quantity to appease these so-called quote-unquote gods.
Yeah, I don't know whether I'd go that far, but what I do know is that in a lot of these occult secret societies, these blood rituals continue to this day. And I think you might make an easier case for people disappearing being sacrificed in these blood rituals, because they're in communication with these celestial masters or spirit guides or aliens, whatever you want to call these things. They are in contact with them, and it's kind of a constitutional doctrine of the adepts and of the Rosicrucians and the very high up in these occultic societies that they communicate regularly with these with the Great White Brotherhood. They're also called as so, and the blood rituals sort of go along with all of that. So I think you might make a easier case than sort of a public spectacle of a mass shooting.
I don't want. That's why I said it's just speculation.
Yeah. Yeah.
But who knows? Like, what's orchestrating it all? It could be somebody being mind controlled to help appease some kind of ritual.
Yeah, and as you notice, I didn't rule it out either.
That's why I said it's just speculation, because people did die, so I don't want to disrespect their by coming out with some crazy, theory. But it's possible, and who knows what spilling blood and what sacrificial killings is, what's tied to it. Because what possesses someone to just do something like that out of nowhere? It's like there's some kind of spirit attachment, I think, to all of this, and some kind of otherworldly possession, maybe.
Yeah. Well, and if you go in with the shaman, the magi, the witch, the trickster ideology of, and connected to these pale white faces and things, you get into what they call the sacred clowns that have crazy wisdom. And these are all similar beings in different cultures, similar positions. And within this ideology is that they are the shamans and the magis and the magicians and the wizards, they become possessed by a archetypical spirit that is within. And they are avatared, although I don't really agree with that term. It's more of a possession to me, because avatar is more what a god does than a demigod does. But I'm splitting hairs there.
Yeah.
So there's two spirits within these individuals that allows them to communicate with the other side and with the rest of the spirits, as what it allows them to feed this message to the pure bloods of today and the adepts of the secret societies. So again, all of this is really rather connected. And you were mentioning these Roman masks earlier today, and I don't know whether or not you were referring to the theater masks or not, but in Greek and Roman theater, you would have these pale white masks that they would put over, right? And these are similar to what they would use in China, only they would decorate them up more as a, some colors involved there. And so when you look at Harlequin mimes or the painting of the faces in the shamans, this is all connected as part of this same belief system, that connects into the court jesters, which were the magi of the occult that were hiding from the Catholic Church during the Middle Ages. And so when you see clowns of today, this is sort of that, and they have that pale white face and the red nose, and some of the ones are really creepy, like the evil clowns, right? And they have these more distorted faces, like what you would have coming out of those theater masks out of Chinese tradition. And where I'm going with all of that is that this whole ideology of a clown has this connection that goes right back to the trickster gods and demigods of prehistory. And in the medieval courts of the kings, if the court jester or the magi was not pleasing the king, what they would do is they would mutilate this clown. And in this case, they like to slice their mouth open with a big smile. And
Whoa.
How fast Now, fast forward to Batman and the
Joker. Yeah, I'm just going to say that.
And that's where that imagery comes from.
Oh, my God. Forever smile here. I'll carve it into your forehead or into your cheeks.
Yeah. Oh,
God, man. Wow. That's intense. You know, yeah.
I thought you might like that.
Yeah, those masks that you're speaking of too. Yeah, they're very white, and then the eyes would have like flames or something around it, or some type of. And you know, the ones that I saw in certain books and certain things from Italian tradition was the Umbria collection, the Shadow collection, and it was supposed to be representing of the Grigori, who are basically guardians of portals, and they connect the material world to these other worlds, to these spirit worlds that we're talking about. And, you know, these beings are also used in rituals and certain postures and certain sacrifices are done revolving these, you know, beings and these energies. And this time of year is basically when they're better connected to their ancestors, and the electromagnetic energy is more intense and more open, you know, and I think that it's a real genetic and ancestral thing as well, and connection. And you know, there are different sharing of blood rituals that is a connection between the Fae and this world as well, and the fairies in this world. Now, these Fae entities that we talk about aren't these always these beautiful little, you know, nursery rhyme creatures that people think of. And I think it's a lot to do with opening up these entranceways and these portals and doorways to these other worlds at this time of year.
Yeah, well, they controlled a lot of the portals. So, and just as you have fairies allegorized, let's say in King Arthur, which people might be able to relate to, you have the Ladies of the Lake. Well, they're guarding a portal to the other world.
Yeah.
So, this is not an unknown concept in Western civilization. It's just people don't really understand what they're being told. So this whole idea that you can connect into the other world through these portals is common in so many different belief systems.
Yeah, and usually when there's a Lady of the Lake, there's always like the King of the Forest as well, like Sylvanus or Mars, or in the Lake Nemi, from my tradition, it was the Rex Nemerensis, and you know, the Lady of the Lake was Egeria. So there's always, you know, some kind of Lady or of the Lake, and King of the Forest, you know, or slain god. And I know that
as in Diana.
Yeah. You know, and there's she could be also like, you know, Hecate or other worship of these gods. And I know at this time of year, you know, there's also the story of werewolves, and there was the wolf god Lupercus. And you know, at this time of year, you know, there's a lot of different thought of, up until now, until February, which is the time of, you know, the Lupercalia. It's seen as a time where the werewolves, or these dogmen type beings, have access to this realm and come in between this realm. And on Halloween night, that specific night is one of the Ember Days. And on the Ember Days is when certain shamanistic traditions, in my culture, it was called, they're called the Benindante. And the Benindante on the Ember Days would fall into a trance-like state, and their soul would leave their body, as in they're in this trance state. Their souls would leave their body, and they would go into the astral realms and have these ritualistic battles to defend the crops and to defend all of the vineyards for that year. And depending on whether they won or lost would be the outcome of the harvest for that year. And they would have these battles on these Ember Days, and October 31st is one of the Ember Days. And these dogmen that they would, some of them would transform into, were called the Luperno. Now, the Lupo is the wolf, and Inferno is winter in Italian. So it's like the dogman from the winter, you know.
Yeah. So let me connect some dots there for the listener. So we talked about Diana and the Temple of Nemi, and she was the ruler of the fairies, right?
Yes.
And she's queen of the fair, which is, you know, also connected. And go back to the show that you and I did the last, for people who want to
know
more
great
about
show,
the Tuatha.
Everybody. Yeah, you got to check
that
out.
Them, yeah, we connected them to the Tuatha De Danann and the Danu. And also Diana is the queen of the spirits, right? So when we talk about spirits, all of this is connected. And then when we connect a couple of dots here on the werewolf, also known and I think quite consistent with Lupercus, and of course I believe his wife was also a werewolf named, I'm trying to think of it right now, Liscus, I think was her name. I might have to stand corrected on that, but this is very much similar. Liska, that's what it was, and very much similar to the Greek tradition, as most all Roman traditions are related to the Greek traditions. But the god Zeus or Zeus turned King Lycaon or Lycan of Arcadia, which would have been a Nephilim or a Titan king, because he crossed Zeus into a shapeshifter type of demon. So now, again, we have the shapeshifter thing that is connected to the shamans and the trickster spirit of the gods and the clown spirit. So all of this stuff is always related somehow as we take it back into history. And what's also really interesting about what you're saying about Lupercus, the Roman wolf god, is his brother is Cern, which is that...
Yes.
Woodland god again.
Yep. That's what we were saying. Yeah, we talked about that once before, and in private, how, you know, even that you have this CERN facility now, you know, and I don't think it's a coincidence that, you know, that they're naming that after a stag god, you know, or some kind of, you know, because there's Lupus is the wolf god, and that's the... Yep. In Italian witchcraft and witchcraft, that represents the waning forces of nature, and Cern is the stag god, and that is the waxing forces of nature. So these gods are the powers of light and dark. And what is Cern going through? They're going through the light and dark. They're going through the matter and the antimatter, right? So it's some sort of connection, definitely. And Cern and Lupus has to do with the equinoxes and what's happening during the harvest time, and it's said in one of the tales that, you know, when Lupus, basically on the day of the spring equinox, we have a couple minutes, right? The day of the spring equinox, while hunting a deer, right? Lupus is struck by this bolt of lightning, and it's shaped like an arrow, and it perishes him. He basically dies. And then the next morning, he rises up from the underworld as the sun. And having learned of the death of his brother, Lupus, Cern becomes the god of this world and then reigns in his place on earth.
Yes. Exactly. Which is, a bizarre connection when we look at Cern as trying to probably go into other dimensions with quantum computing and everything
then even,
like that. So.
Yeah, and even that story, like they then find the wolf skin of Lupus, and then it's like it's magical, and somebody finds it and it transforms men into wolves.
Yeah.
And
then they formed a society, as I recall.
The Lupercai,
It was
a festival. It was for the priests, yeah.
Yeah. You know, of shapeshifters.
Yep. And
amazing.
To become a shapeshifter in shamanism, right? You basically have to be the wolf. You have to think like a wolf. You have to, you know, become the wolf, and then you are the wolf.
Yep. Exactly. So whenever you see these reflections in entertainment of this animal spirit that's shaped like a wolf, this is kind of a reflection of that whole ideology. Do I have time to talk about the jack-o'-lantern?
Yeah, we have 4 minutes. We can do it.
Yeah, so I just thought because it's so popular, and as I mentioned earlier, it wasn't the pumpkin that starts in North America, and they used to use turnips. But this has a very, very old tradition that's very much related to what we've been talking about.
And that turnip lantern story was intense, Gary. I got to go listen back to it later.
Yeah, it is intense. It's scary when you think about it. And So the jack-o'-lantern has this history back into the Tuatha De Danann and into Ireland and into that part of Celtic history and into the land of the fairies and the fair folk, so connecting some of that. And it was used, the jack-o'-lantern, again as that lantern we talk about to scare off the spirits of the dead. But who jack-o'-lantern was, he was actually a Tuatha De Danann, a hero from old Irish myth who tricked the devil in the mythology. But when he died, when Jack dies, his spirit didn't go to sleep. And so he had to, because he had crossed the devil basically said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to be sentenced to roam the earth as a ghostly figure with a burning coal in a turnip with slits in it to light his way. And so that's where that whole jack-o'-lantern sort of mythology comes from. And now, it's and then you see what they were doing with the lanterns with the Celts, say around 0 to 500 AD.
That's pretty crazy. Yeah, and now everybody has one on their front step and they're in their window.
So Jack apparently walks around as a ghostly spirit figure with this jack-o'-lantern.
I never even heard that story.
Yeah, there's so much in Irish mythology and mythologies around the world. It's just endless when you start reading and you start recognizing what they're talking about.
Yeah, and you know what? I also got the book, The Books of Og from Enoch and the Giants, and we got to do a show on that one time because it talks about Baal, the Baal in it, and the Rephaim, and like the uncircumcised and circumcised Nephilim, and all of this.
That's a 2-hour show to do.
Yeah, that we could do that on my other show. And
I've done a couple shows on that. It's an awesome discussion.
Yeah, King Og, and that book's got me going. And do you think Baal is sort of like Baphomet?
Very, very similar. Yeah, you'd be all along the same sort of line, same type of god.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Gary, I want to thank you for coming on for Fallen Angel Friday, Halloween style. And it's always a pleasure to have you. And thank you, everybody out there listening. I want to thank my producer, Sarge, Para X Radio, everybody in the chat room, everybody that tunes in every week, the loyal listeners. And you can find me tomorrow night on TFR Live, my show, Eye of Ra. And thanks, everybody. Once again, I say, Spiral out.
I want to hold you inside the fire, clean flames reflecting inside your